We're ready. I'd like to welcome everyone to the City Council work session for May 16th, 2023. And our first item is Sherry Pace, our Community Development Director, is going to give us all we wanted to know and more about Zeroscape.
Hopefully you can concentrate when you don't have food in your belly, so.
We will interrupt you when it arrives. How's that?
I'm fine with that. So what I have prepared for you tonight is first an outline of what our water efficient landscape ordinance does and does not do. So I wanted to go over that with you because there seems to have been a little bit of confusion on that. And then based upon the last year of implementation, perhaps some changes or updates that we might want to consider making to it. So we'll start with the applicability. Who does the new ordinance apply to? So it applies to new and rehabilitated landscaping on public projects, on private commercial and industrial projects, on developer installed landscaping, so in multifamily projects or single family projects where the developer is responsible for any open space, or sometimes they're responsible for front yards. New single family homes or two family homes on the front side, rear yards and the park strip. Homeowners who replace their lawn in the front side, rear or park strip. Multifamily commercial or industrial additions where they do an addition of more than 30% of their existing footprint. And then site plan amendments where they're adding or removing 5,000 square feet or more of impervious surface. So exceptions to our ordinance are if there is a specific physical hardship that has some unique property characteristics that isn't normal in the neighborhood. So it might be a slope or it could be a soil type. We would have to look at each case by case. So far, nobody has asked for an exception, but we wanted to put that in there. If they get an exception or a reduction, it would be to the percentage of the landscaping requirements, and that would be mitigated through enhancements to other areas. So we're going to put in more plant life in this other area instead of putting, meeting the 10% or 15% landscaping standard. And then it cannot be granted to increase building area density or to meet the minimum parking requirements of their site plan approval. Here's just a couple of examples of projects that have Zeroscape. So in our design standards, it refers to our plant selection. So the first thing is that it talks about when you're selecting the plant, you need to select plants that are made for our climate and our soil conditions, and then group those plantings together with similar water needs. So you don't want to put something like a dogwood that's really high water consumption, which we wouldn't have that in our list anyway, but alongside something that was, a cactus or something like that. That wouldn't make sense to group those two together. So you're supposed to group the similar plantings together. It specifically requires that if you have slopes over 25% on your lot, you have to plant it with deep rooted water conserving plants for erosion control, and you cannot put turf on those slopes. Park strips or areas on your lot that are less than 8 feet in width, park strips at all and areas with less than 8 feet in width cannot have any turf on them. Plants and trees are recommended from the Weber Basin Water Conservancy District list and the North Salt Lake City tree list. So over on this graphic, you'll see three of our tables. We have actually 9 tables. So we have had a study done that evaluates trees for the various soil conditions and various park sizes or park strip sizes. So we have challenging soil conditions out in the Foxborough area. We have the Midtown area here in the town center, and then the hillside areas. And each one of those has a list of trees that are good in those soils. And then those lists are further divided down by size. So small trees, medium trees, and large trees based upon the size and width of your park strip. We are trying to get people to plant park strip trees that are appropriate for the size of park strip they have, so that we get less lifting of our curbs and less lifting of the sidewalk. Now, the Weber Basin plant list, as I went to their website this morning and was looking over it, you can actually select a plant and you can type in that plant's name and it will tell you whether or not that's appropriate for our climate and whether it's water conserving. So it's very open-ended in that respect. There's not a list of plants where you have to choose, but you can actually put in plant type names, and some of them have pictures so you can see what the plant looks like. So it's very helpful. I don't have the link here because I forgot to come back and get it when their website was down this morning, but I will get that for you, and then we'll give you a copy of this slides presentation so you can share it if you would like to. Then the next restriction on our plantings are plant bed sizes. So depending on what you're going to put in your planting bed, the plant bed should be a minimum of 1 foot to 3 feet in depth. Like if you're just doing those tall grasses, that can be a 1 foot depth. If you're doing other shrubbery, you want at least 3 feet of depth. And then we have a provision where if you're in the town center core, you can use planter boxes in those areas. And then the other requirement is that new trees be planted with drip irrigation systems.
Sherry, if I have questions, mm-hmm. should I wait till the end?
No, I'm fine with you asking.
My first question is more related to the first slide, mm-hmm. and it is about HOAs. If these requirements are in conflict with HOA requirements, what happens in that situation?
So we have a section of the code that says an HOA cannot require more landscaping than what's prohibited in our code. So that would be illegal. So it needs to be.
So the city supersedes the HOA.
Yep, the city would supersede those. And okay. There are specific provisions in state code as well as in our ordinance about HOAs requiring like turf in park strips. They're not allowed to do that anymore.
When these guidelines go out, would they automatically be sent to HOAs within the city so they would be updated, or are they just notified by residents who then would have to update their own HOAs?
Well, we adopted these a year ago, so these are already in effect. But we've had a couple of people call and say, hey, my HOA is doing this, and we've just explained to them what the state code is and given them a copy of our ordinance, and I haven't heard back from them saying that they've had any trouble with their HOA after that.
So I know the HOA I'm a part of, some of the things would be in conflict with this, but as far as I know, they're not fighting it. Okay, my second question is on this slide, and it's specifically with areas that are less than 8 feet cannot have turf. And I don't know the answer to this, but I think that there might be some houses in Foxborough where the backyard is less than 8 feet, but they might want to have an area of grass where their like dog can come to the bathroom or something like that. What would happen in that situation?
So if they already have grass and turf, they can keep it. It's if they want to rehabilitate their lawn and take some portion out, then they have to bring it into compliance with the new ordinance.
So
I wouldn't approve a new landscape plan that didn't meet the standard.
Would a regular house be submitting a landscape plan to you?
They could if they wanted to make sure on the rebate
that
we're going to get from the state.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. So if they haven't landscaped their backyards currently, they would not be able to put grass in.
Right. But I might not know about it. So it's, you know, complaint-driven basis. I mean, if somebody sent it, I wouldn't know.
Okay. I wonder, and this is maybe to the council as well, if there might be some type of a asterisk or something that there could be an approval for that specific thing. Like, I have a dog, and I don't have anywhere for my dog to go in the backyard. Or I have a toddler, and I would like this 8 feet to have my toddler run around. That it wouldn't just be flatly prohibited. Not that it would be accounted for in the code, but they could then come and say, here, this is the reason why we're doing this.
I'm not sure if any of the single family homes have less than 8 feet, because if I remember correctly, I think the minimum was 15 feet is the rear setback in all of those zones. But I can check that.
And I don't know the answer either.
Sorry. If and when we look at any modifications, I would be comfortable just making a backyard exempt from that. You know, just given the basic nature that backyards tend to be places that people play in and enjoy.
And actually use the turf.
And the number of houses that would actually have a backyard that is less than 8 feet is going to be really small. So I don't think this is going to be impacting a lot of people. But if it is, I think it could impact the resellability of the house. That, like, you, the backyard's never going to be finished, and it's, and you have a dog, so you're not going to buy this house or something like that.
We can certainly evaluate how many people that might impact too.
Or just on a case by case basis when they bring it up.
But I would like to know if we have a lot of them. So I'll take a look at that just as a sample from the different areas in Foxborough and see what we have.
My backyard is more than 8 feet and it's pretty dang small.
So mine too.
I mean, I don't imagine 8 feet isn't very much. I mean, so.
We're going to put in artificial turf in mine. Okay, so more on the design standards. So there are some regulations related to the mulch selection. So non-irrigated areas have to have a 3-inch layer of mulch. The mulch can be rock or angular gravel. It needs to be washed. It needs to be 2-inch minus. Pea gravel is prohibited in the park strip at all. Park strips with slopes on roads that are slopes of greater than 8% have to have the rock compacted, and they can't use bark or lava rock because they're so light that they wash out really easily into the curb and into the storm drain. And then the final grade of rock mulch, of the mulch, needs to be slightly below the sidewalk and curb. So one of the updates that I've identified in this review is that we didn't really talk about bark mulch use in the yard or identified it. Kind of leads you to believe that the only kind of mulch you can have is rock mulch, and that's not the case. So that's something that I think we need to update. And then perhaps something that we need to look at is like decorative rocks. So if you can see in these examples, these aren't angular or crushed rocks, but these are really nice examples of things you can do in your yard for Xeriscape. So I would like to look at those a little closer and see if we can make some accommodations for those in the yard, at least.
On my walk, I noticed there was mulch that looks like it's ground up tires. It's quite attractive, but I'm wondering if that can be included as well.
I can look at that. Yeah, okay. I wanted to look at the artificial stuff too, so I hadn't known about the
rubber mulch. I've had rubber mulch in our backyard before.
But yeah, I will look at that. Make a note of that.
I was just going to make the comment too that in my front yard, you know, it's part of the HOA, they've used the bark and stuff around there, but it always, a lot of it always washes out onto the street. And it's not that much of a slope. It's just
it doesn't take much.
No, it doesn't take much. And there's always.
Or even blows away.
Blows away. I haven't seen as much blowing away, but every time we have one of these storms or something, I see a little trail of the bark going down.
One of the things about the bark mulch, too, is that it, over time, it does degrade and it turns into soil that then can harbor weeds very easily. So putting down the weed barrier and then the rock or the bark mulch. In a few years, you'll have weeds in the bark mulch, despite the weed barrier. Yeah. Okay, then we have some requirements for soil preparation. They need to scarify the soil to a 6-inch depth and then amend the soil with organic material based on their soil conditions, as recommended in their design. For turf design, the areas where turf is allowed, it needs to be drought tolerant. Again, prohibited in areas less than 8 feet wide or on slopes greater than 25% in park strips or in parking lot islands. So we won't have any new commercial development come in that is going to have grass in the parks or in the parking islands in the parking lot. And then we have a requirement for the turf that you do use to have a minimum of one tree per 1,000 square feet. So an update that I think we need to consider is, are we going to allow artificial turf or not? And both in the park strip or on the yards. And I'll get into that on the next slide, I believe.
There's a home in the neighborhood where I live that has artificial turf. I mean, she's completely regrassed with artificial turf.
Yeah.
Does it look nice?
Yeah, it looks very nice.
Awesome. I'll have to get the address so I can go take a look at it.
There are several by me as well, and they look fantastic.
Nice.
They have new kinds of turf that have, like, green and yellow and stuff. So it's not just
one
shocking
color.
Green turf. It, you know,
I want my artificial turf to not look healthy, right?
Yeah.
Well, Well, my experience, our experience with artificial turf was over in Wendover, and at their one of their event centers or something there. They had artificial turf in the park strip, basically. It was the front area. But that artificial turf was almost kind of dangerous. If you rubbed your hand on it, you'd kind of cut it, It was really sharp. So it was kind of
you
weird.
You should try playing football on it.
It's what I was going to say. I don't know about, it was one of those things where we went, this is kind of cool, and you rub your hand on it. I was like, paper cuts all over your hand. It was
hopefully it's getting better and better.
I think there's different kinds. That's what I was saying. There's the cheap stuff.
There's definitely the cheap stuff that you can go buy on the roll at Home Depot.
Yeah, even though this was a nice commercial building, I think they just used the cheap stuff. And probably nobody ever walks on it or, rubs their hand through it or anything.
They didn't know you would be coming to rub
it. Right, I was just checking it out, and it was kind of a little... Yeah, it was kind of a little slope anyway, so it wasn't anything that, anybody would really be walking on. We're just checking it out and see what it looked like. But I got, we don't want this in our yard, but I know they've got a lot nicer ones too. So.
Okay, so the design standards for park strips, and I think this is one that you wanted to revisit particularly, is the plant coverage. So it requires live plants up to 22 inches tall. There can be some accent plants that grow as tall as 36 inches as long as they're outside of the clear view area. And they can't be sight obscuring. So you can't plant your park strips so full of other plant life that it sight obscures the sidewalk or your home from the street. Our requirement is for 33% live plants. The street trees count towards those live plants. This is the what we have established for the coverage for a small tree, a medium tree, and a large tree. So, for instance, if they had 300 square feet of park strip and they put in one tree, that one tree would count as their 33%. They would pick that.
Sorry, yeah. Remind me, if a tree is not planted in the park strip, but the canopy extends over the park strip, does that get counted?
We have not counted that at this point. But it is something that we could consider. That's a note to make, too. Prohibited in the park strip are plants that have thorns, spines, or sharp hazards, ones that can damage bikes as you drive across them if they grow across the sidewalk. I mean, we obviously...
Bags of glass.
We don't want that. No, we don't want that. As far as gravel, rocks, and boulders in the park strip, the gravel and rocks are prohibited within 36-inch radius of a tree that does not have drip irrigation. So because of the heat that they create and hold into the soil. So if they have a drip irrigation, you can put the rocks right up to the trees. Boulders are limited to 36 inches of height, and they have to be set back from the curb 24 inches. And then the if you put gravel and rocks in your park strip, you have to compact those if you're on a slope of greater than 8%. Paving materials in the park strip, so you can have poured concrete or pavers, brick, stone. They are allowed, but they're allowed limitedly as 4-foot wide carriageways. So it should be to carry people from their car at the curb to the sidewalk. So you can see a couple of examples there on the lower right. And then retaining walls and fences are not allowed in the park strip unless they have been approved as part of a general development plan. So that would be a really rare circumstance, and I haven't been able to figure out when that might happen, but that would be the only time it would be allowed. So it would have gone through Planning Commission and City Council for the approval on the general development plan. And then an update that we may need for this is to either specifically prohibit artificial turf in the park strip or allow it in the park strip. So in talking with John from Public Works, we have a property owner that has put some artificial turf in his park strip, and now we have a water line project that has to go in there. And so there is some coordination that has to be done with that. How do you open that up without damaging it? how much does it cost to put it back? Do we need a special contractor? We need to evaluate all those things and decide if we want to allow artificial turf in the park strip at all. I think in my research, most cities are not allowing it in park strips for that very reason, because utility companies mess it up. I mean, we all know and have heard the stories of what Google Fiber has done to landscaping irrigation systems in the park strips. And so can you imagine them going through your artificial turf and how expensive that might be? So that's something that we'll need to consider. So in these updates, when we talk about artificial turf, I wanted to get a little bit into this. And so I started looking at what other ordinances require. Particularly West Valley City has a really good ordinance right now. So we have to decide where we want to allow it or prohibit it, and what percentage that we would allow it in the park strip, on the lots, if we do it all. And some of the standards that have been put in other ordinances are it needs to be lifelike individual blades that emulate natural turf. It prohibits indoor and outdoor plastic or the nylon carpeting, the really old cheap stuff that we're all familiar with from the 70s. The pile height of the grass needs to be at least 1.5 inches tall. The face weight, which is basically the density of the grass, 50 ounces per square yard. And West Valley is requiring a minimum 8-year warranty against color fade and decreased pile height. So they're wanting to make sure that it's a good quality that you're picking to put in there. As far as installation and maintenance, there have to be rules about that. And the things that I've read about is that it needs to have an aggregate subbase that's compacted. It needs to be nailed and glued, not sewn together. There should be a solid barrier device on the edge of it, like curbing or a sidewalk or bender board, so that it looks natural. You don't want to have a straight line that goes away from the sidewalk. That's kind of weird. It needs to be on a leveled surface. And the grain direction when they lay it has to all be going the same direction, or it would look odd if you piece that together in the wrong direction. It needs to be trimmed to fit all the edges, and it needs to have grading, compaction, and drainage. I mentioned the compaction already. There's a feature for minimum water permeability of 30 inches per hour per square yard. So I'm assuming that's a rating that each of the different kinds of artificial turf has. And then it needs to be cleaned and maintained. So my understanding is that most of these do drain, like your pets can go on them. You can clean it up with just washing it off with the hose on occasion. So any questions about artificial turf? We'll learn some more. So other updates for consideration is...
Should we break here?
We have...
It is.
Getting cold.
Yeah.
I think that's a good idea.
We waited for Natalie to come so we could eat.
Natalie and the pizza were stuck behind a train.
Let's why don't we take a 10-minute recess here?
Sounds good.
Okay. and go. Well, did Wendy start the recording? We're good? Okay.
Okay, so for xeriscaping your yard, our code right now doesn't say, it doesn't specifically allow xeriscaping, but it also doesn't specifically prohibit it. It just says that your landscaping in your yard has to include live plants. So I think that's something that we need to consider if we're going to go explicitly with xeriscape and allow people to do xeriscape yards. Are we going to allow it in the front side and the rear yards? Is there a percentage of live plant material that we're going to require? And when I get to my last slide, or second to last slide, I believe, I'll show you why we need to talk about how much plant material.
Can I ask a quick question? Mm-hmm. You keep saying rear yards. Are we allowed to tell people what they can do in their backyard?
We are allowed to tell people what they can do in all parts of their yard.
Okay, I just, I work closely with an HOA in my daily life, and the legislature recently passed a law that said they can't tell you what to do in your backyard.
The HOA.
They were not talking about municipalities. They were talking about HOAs.
Yeah, what if it's based on water use?
So, yeah, it said that the HOA could not tell you what to do in your backyard.
We'll double check that. Todd's looking
it
up
right
now.
Oh, I'm sure
it
hasn't been done for municipalities yet. I just, you know.
I mean, right now we tell people that how tall your fence can be in your backyard and where your shed can be in your backyard and things like that. So it's just something that we need to think about.
Sherry, mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. When you say xeriscape, what do you mean?
So I mean the combination of rocks and plant material, or inorganic material and organic material. So removal of turf for...
Okay.
Rocks, mulch,
I think,
plant.
But I think what we mean
trees.
Is drought tolerant, low water use.
Right.
I think people get confused. And they often think it means zero scape, but it doesn't. You know that. But I think that having that defined is a good idea in the ordinance.
I've even seen it like on your public outreach sites. People put, what's the difference between zero, and they spell it with Z-E-R-O. And xeriscape, mm-hmm. and explain what xeriscape actually
good.
Is. It doesn't mean zero scape. So it's the pronunciation kind of thing.
And if we want to get into the weeds with xeriscaping, rock and mulch have different effects on the heat island.
Absolutely.
And so if we could encourage or require mulch in places where people might say, should I do rock or mulch? It would definitely help with that.
And certainly in places where it won't get washed away into the curb and storm drain. So that's definitely something we need to consider. So our current standards on related to turf in your yards are new single-family homes can have up to 6,500 square feet of their lot in turf, or up to 6,500 square feet of turf, or 25% of their lot, whichever is less. New or rehabilitated commercial, industrial, or multifamily can have up to 5,000 square feet or 5% of their lot, whichever is less. So what we want to consider here as we move forward is, do we want to apply this to rehabilitated existing single family explicitly? We don't have that explicitly in there right now, although we've been encouraging people, if they're removing their yard, to follow these types of principles. And then we need to consider whether we want a percentage of live material in our yards and whether, again, if we're going to allow artificial turf. So this is the very next slide that I was going to talk about. So what are our available rebate programs? I went on Weber Basin's, and I spelled that wrong, Weber Basin Water Conservancy District. There are several programs. So the first, of course, is the Flip Your Strip, which we participate in. It requires that you be a qualifying city. So out of the 15 cities in Davis County, 11 of the cities are qualifying, and we are one of them. You have to apply before you begin ripping your strip or killing your grass in your park strip. That they want to see that it was alive and that you're removing something that's alive. It's not retroactive. If you've already taken it out, you can't get the rebate. They require that you take a class on on ripping your strip and irrigation systems and what kind of plant materials to use and those types of things. You have to have a signed participation agreement, and that rebate is $1.25 per square foot. So the Landscape Lawn Exchange, which is the new program based upon the funding that the legislature provided, again, you still have to be in one of the qualifying cities, which we qualify because we have our water efficient landscape ordinance already in place. You have to, again, apply before beginning. They actually have a site visit that they do on your yard, whether it's virtual, whether it's by phone and you show them your yard and picture, I'm not sure because it had some comments about virtual site visits, but they definitely said you had to have a pre-conversion sites plan site visit. So this was the percentage of plant coverage. So in order to qualify for the Landscape Lawn Exchange, you still have to have 35% plant coverage on your yard that you remove. And artificial turf does not count towards that. So if we want to have people qualify for this rebate through Weber Basin, I think we probably should match that percentage. I don't know if that's the right percentage or not, but it is what is required for them to participate in this program.
And how are trees calculated? Yeah.
So that's up for us to decide. In our ordinance right now for Park Strip, we base it on the size of the tree. So if it's small, medium, or large tree, and then we tried to average out what the average canopy cover would be of those size trees. And we went 50 square feet, 100 or 75 square feet, and 100 square feet.
But we are counting the canopy.
Yes. Okay. We are counting the canopy in the Park Strip.
And when they say 35% plant coverage, are they talking when the plants are planted or when the plants are established and grown?
At maturity.
At maturity.
Yes.
35 is great.
Yep. And let's see. So lawn removal and replacement with a different kind of sod is not allowed. So you can't replace your Kentucky bluegrass with a drought-tolerant sod and qualify for the rebate. You have to replace it with something else and the plant coverage. They also require them, the applicants, to self-verify that the proposed changes meets the city ordinance. And so that's where that came into when I mentioned that earlier, that those people would apply and they would come in and say, hey, I need a land use permit that shows that what I want to do complies with the city ordinance so I can get my rebate from Weber Basin. And we wouldn't charge a fee for anything like that. And that's what West Valley City is doing on theirs. They have a no-fee permit, and it's pretty common and can be reviewed pretty quickly. They have to have their prerequisite class, their signed participation agreement, and they can get $202.50 per square foot. They have three other rebate programs. One is for residential smart irrigation controllers and replacement of toilets that were built in homes or that are in homes older than 1994. So you can get $75 for a smart irrigation controller and $100 up to $100 to replace your toilets that are old and not water efficient. Commercial smart irrigation controllers can be rebated 50% up to $1,500 per controller for commercial commercial and industrial sites. And then commercial sites can also, that have toilets that were built pre-1994, can get $100 per toilet. So those are the programs that are available for
Sherry,
rebates.
So why would someone contemplating changing their park strip, why would they want to go with Flip the Strip when they could do the Landscape Lawn Exchange and get twice as much money?
Maybe they want to do both.
Can do both.
And to save water.
Question I had, Sherry, for you, was the prerequisite class. Who teaches that class and how does it work? And
it's handled at Weber Basin. So last year I went, and Mackenzie and Allie from my department, we went to the class because we wanted to know what they were teaching. It's about a two-hour class on a Saturday. I'm sure they have them on different days too, but it was takes about 2 hours, and they just educate you about how do you convert your irrigation system that you have in your yard right now or in your park strip to drip irrigation. What kind of plants are good? What kind of rocks are good? How you should plant a tree? What kind of trees you should choose? So it's kind of like that, but it's a very educational. I found it very helpful.
So does the class that you take there, does it count for both classes in these programs?
So I know that the class that they had for Flip Your Strip was in person. I did read on their website for the Landscape Lawn Exchange that there's actually going to be an online class that people can go and watch the video and learn from the video. So I don't know if you have to take a little test at the end to prove that you watched it or not. I haven't done that. But they did say there would have classes available online, too.
So if you took the class at Weber Basin, would that count towards the Landscape Lawn Exchange?
It might. I don't know for sure, though.
You don't know that. Okay.
So the last slide that I have for you is just kind of an update on what we can do as far as our outreach efforts. And so these are things that we're already doing, plus things that we've said we're going to do in our general plan update that will be on your regular agenda tonight. So we have stated in that plan that we're going to have a public outreach coordinator. We're going to develop a water conservation webpage. I'm already have some work being done on that for my department with some links. We are supposed to develop some print resource materials and distribute those. We're supposed to coordinate classes with Weber Basin Water Conservancy District, and we're supposed to have a water conservation and social media campaign, which Linda's been taking care of some of that. She did a lot of that outreach last year and has been re-advertising some of that as we move into spring and summer with once the snow finally melted and we could start doing some landscaping, right? And then we're supposed to promote Water Week and Earth Day forums in the city and encourage people to conserve water. So that's my presentation about what our Water Efficient Landscape Ordinance does. Do you have any comments or feedbacks, things that you would like me to consider as I move forward with drafting some amendments to it?
The only question I had was, didn't you say that in order to consider requiring the landscape in the park strip, it had to be 4 feet wide, or is it any size?
No, that's based on the size of the trees. So depending on how wide your park strip is the size of tree that can be put in there.
Okay.
We generally have 4 foot park strips, but there are areas in the city that have some 3 foot
like
park strips.
2 foot park strips.
I have a 5 foot park strip.
There are some smaller ones.
I know, I am fancy.
This is so helpful. Thank you for doing that.
You're welcome.
I wonder if this presentation can be put on the water conservation webpage for the city so people can go through this as well.
I think it can be. We can clean it up a little bit too because some of those things are questions, so we should.
And then I just had the question on our major throughfares like Center Street and where the snowplows basically are pushing salt all over the park strip. Is there an exception to putting something there?
So there are drought-tolerant plants. When I went to the class at Weber Basin, or not drought-tolerant plants, excuse me, salt-tolerant plants that actually can be used in the park strip if you're in an area where you have heavy salt use.
If we wanted to overlap Earth Day or Water Conservation Week with our food trucks, that would be easy to have like a booth there or something. So I would ask the committee to look into that.
Also with the Arbor Day celebration, that would be a great outreach moment.
And that's always, that happens in the spring is my understanding too, in April and May on both of those. So it would be good timing.
And related, something that the Health and Wellness Committee has talked about in collaboration with the Parks and Arts Board is that the Parks and Arts Board had suggested at the food truck night that there is a booth that they originally said they would staff that would be kind of an outreach, ask questions about the city. And we talked potentially about that being something that gets broadened to the entire city council and staff, where people take turns staffing that North Salt Lake information booth. And so it just provides this really visible outreach where you might not know all the answers to the questions that people come up and ask you, but you're a face, all of us could be a face to the city, and maybe we sign up to do it twice a year or something like that.
Okay, thank you, Sherry.
Thank you.
Do we need to take a break at all? Okay, let's keep going.